Welcome back to the Reclaiming Podcast. This is podcast number 3. My name is Michael Stover. I'm here with my co-author, Pete Tackett. We've recently written a book called Reclaiming, a handbook for developing a restorative culture in your church. And these podcasts just look to dig a little deeper into some subjects that have to do with the restoration ministry. And in this podcast, we're going to look at the topic, seeing the need for restoration in your church. And Pete, last time we talked about seeing the needs around you, being aware that there is a need for restoration in the lives of ministers and church members. We're going to dig a little deeper and get a little more personal this time, and how we begin doing that.
Well, thanks, Michael, for being here today and for another opportunity to talk about a subject that's really close to my heart. I think often people think about restorative ministry, and they really approach it from the perspective, oh, that's when a preacher has an affair and they just want their job back, or that's when a staff member steals some money and we just, you know, whatever, you know. And that's really, nothing could be further from the truth. And we talk in many places about what restoration is and what it's not. But what I'm talking about is developing a culture of restoration in your church and doing what you can do. And so as a member, a leader, or a pastor, you need to begin to get the vision of the people in your church that are in need of restoration. And we talk about a lot of them, but you know, you may have a parachurch member, a parachurch organization member. You may have somebody that works for, you know, Campus Crusade for Christ, for a local rescue mission ministry. They may be a chaplain for hospice. And they're still in ministry, but they're not on a church staff. And as a leader, a friend, or a pastor, you look at them and you go, you know, they're just not themselves. They're overwhelmed with this. They're in need of not, you know, I say sometimes that when a person has crashed and burned and has sinned and it has become public, their restoration is an intensive care process. You have to go through triage and intensive care. That person on the other end of it that's just burning out, they've not burned out, but they are burning out, we need to get eyes to see them. Because the best thing to do in restoration is to rescue them before the shipwreck happens.
Absolutely.
And so we find ourselves forgetting that those guys are out there and they're working. I think another good example of that is someone who has a heart for a particular ministry. Even within your church, maybe they're a children's worker, maybe they're a youth worker, maybe they're a deacon that feels deeply the compassion needs of the church, so you put them in charge of benevolence and those kind of things. And here's some things that you start, if you'll learn to listen and you'll learn to see them, those kind of folks will start to say things like, man, why am I the only one doing this? Why can't I get any help? Man, I'm so tired. It seems like the only time I go to church is when I've got something to do. Or, man, I haven't been in a worship service with adults in years. That ought to say to the person who is watching them, whether that's a coworker, whether that's a pastor or a friend, hey, I need to get this person some help, because here's what's going to happen to them. They probably won't have some major cataclysmic sin in their life. But you're going to look around before long, and they're just not going to be there. And what they're going to do is, because they're godly people, they're going to go to another church somewhere, and they're going to sit down in the worship center, and they're going to soak in the worship, and they're going to soak in the teaching of God's word. And my point is, why can't they do that at the church they've been a part of for so many years? They're not ever going to look at the pastor and say, I quit, or the leadership team and say, I quit. Unless it's already too late most of the time. They've checked out mentally on the organization. So when you see that happening, why don't you give them permission to take a break? Hey, this year, why don't you not teach that class? Why don't you go find an adult group to fellowship with, or that sort of thing? So I think that's one of the places that we need to start seeing it. There's a lot of others, but that's just an example that I use.
You used some different terms in chapter 2 of the book, talking about, you know, some specific roles and categories of people. The one you just described, I think, falls into the category of the spiritually retreated And you gave an example in the book of a man who, you know, there wasn't a huge explosion, there wasn't a large sin, wasn't anything necessarily just wrong, but he had just given and given and given until, you know, his tank was empty. Right. And he needed to withdraw and recharge and, you know, be restored. And so until he was ready then to step back into, you know, frontline ministry.
And, you know, Gary Smalley, to use his language, talks about how do you get your love tank filled up. Well, I think there's a ministry tank that has to be filled up too.
Absolutely.
And there's fellowship, all the five functions of the church. And to me, that's one of the pictures that we need to grasp. If a person is focused on one ministry to the exclusion of all the other functions of the church, then they are destined to burn out. Mm-hmm. And so I think that particular example that I used, and this is not to say that we're the only church that would do this, but the fact that this man drove from another state to our church for a year and a half, mm-hmm. is an indication of how far he had to go to find a place that would just let him heal. Mm-hmm. Even in local churches, you know, and I realize it's hard for the pastor to be away for an extended period of time, but you know, you need to give your staff a sabbatical. You need to give your pastor a sabbatical. You know, I almost never attend a meeting where I'm not the main speaker. I mean, as a pastor, that's just the reality of the situation. So one of my men in my D group last night stayed behind, and this is a flare to me. Life's very busy right now. And he stayed behind, and this was the question he posed. Do you have any friends? And what he was saying is, who do you go hang out with that doesn't talk about church and that sort of thing? And if you find yourself, or you have someone you love, and you look at them and it says, it just doesn't look like they're having fun anymore, this doesn't seem to be fulfilling anymore, then you've got some responsibility to them to say, hey, listen, you're in trouble, and we're going to help you by letting you take some time off.
That's right. That's right. One of the most valuable ministries to me when we moved back here and just kind of settled was when we were ready to move into a church, was just to be allowed to come. And we joked about this, you know, I marked out the back row for my family as a pastor. You never get to sit in the back. And we just occupied that back row for well over a year before, you know, I even volunteered to pass an offering plate to help take the offering. I mean, we just sat and soaked and healed and sometimes hurt and relived some things. But that church and that pastor and staff were willing to just let us sit and soak, and they loved on us and ministered to us and just gave us a place to recharge and helped us plug into a small group that, you know, knew enough about our story to know that these people need to be ministered to. And now's not the time to be asking much of anything from them. They just need to be ministered to.
Right.
And, you know, that period of time did so much to heal our hearts and to really, after what we had been through, make us realize not everyone in the church, you know, is ugly. Not everyone in the church is out to get you. There are God's people everywhere that want to love on you and minister to you. Because there for a period of time, we felt like, you know, church people were the enemy because of how we had been treated.
Right. And, you know, for a person in a church trying to keep their eyes open for that, I think one of the places that pastors, laypersons, small group leaders can look for to kind of get their eyes tuned to that is look at your class roll of somebody who used to be there all the time and they're just not there anymore. Look at your church roll. And there's some self-righteous indignation from people sometime. Well, we invited them and they've never come. You know, Jesus was pretty doggone specific in Luke 15. He said, if you got 99 healthy sheep that are in the fold, and you got one that's missing, you leave the fold and you go find them. And one of the things that I've said through the years, especially since I returned to the pastorate 10 years ago, is that the highways of my community are littered with the carcasses of once thriving, healthy church members. Yeah. We've coined in this generation a phrase for it that we've never used before the last few years. And we talk about the chronically de-churched. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people get out of church because they don't know God. I mean, the reality, you can't stay there and worship if you don't know God, if you don't have a real relationship with Him. But there are a lot of people that call themselves spiritual and Christian that don't attend church. And so that's one of the places you look. Who used to be here? That's one of the dangers of bloated, inflated church membership roles. Mm-hmm. You know, the joke always is, when I came back to Antioch Church, we had about 80 adults, most of them senior adults, and had 900 members. The FBI couldn't have found 400 of those people. And so we just started going through them. But, you know, there are a number of folks who are there today because we just asked them, what went wrong? You know, how did you find yourself out of church? And that's just the nature of the beast these days. So one of the things that we can do to see that is just look at your class role, look at your church role, and go, man, I hadn't thought of that person in a month or a year or 10 years. But what if you just went and knocked on the door and said, hey, sorry I lost touch with you? So there's a lot of other kinds of people, you know, in that, on those roads and the carcasses that we're talking about. You've got the spiritually mistreated. Mm-hmm. At the risk of rubbing a wound, people like Michael Stover, who've just been mistreated. And it's just hard to trust the church again. Sometimes you have to say, you don't have to trust the church again. You can trust me. I'm going to be here no matter what. We're in the process of having a family leave our church. And interestingly enough, in my world, we're a fairly small congregation, about 360 covenant members. And we don't do that 900 members on roll anymore. We feel like membership ought to mean something. But because of the relationship aspect of our church, it's very rare that somebody purposely leaves us to go somewhere else. Probably doesn't happen twice a year. And so we're in the process of handing off an extended family, a man, his homebound wife, their grandson, daughter, and son-in-law, to another sister church in our community. And they've been very hard to keep in church for a long time, and I've loved them, done all I can, and I think they're really going to plug in at this one. They have another daughter that's very connected, and she's been very instrumental in trying to get them to that church. And so I had a conversation with them where I simply said, I would rather you attend that church than not attend my church. But over and over, he has said to me, even in this process, he said, nobody has ever pastored or cared for me the way you do. He's never been able to connect, but he knows we care about him. And so he was a very similar situation to yours, Michael. He was on staff at a local church probably 15 years ago now, and wife began to get chronically ill. Some bad things happened, and the church may or may not have handled it correctly, but he just gave up on church. And so that's another piece of the puzzle when it comes to seeing things. You may have to see people that you can help for a while, but you may not be the final answer. The truth is, you know, you and I met and talked, and we are not a terribly traditional church, but we look like a terribly traditional church, and your family couldn't get past that. You know, we just, you know, when you've been bulldozed by a traditional church, so helping you find the other church was the best thing I could do for you at that point.
Right.
And so when we see those that have been spiritually mistreated, we may have to recognize they're probably not ever going to be, well, never's not the right word, they're probably not going to immediately be thriving church members. They're going to need a lot of TLC.
Right.
To go back to my analogy of, you know, when a pastor crashes and burns, he needs intensive care. But typically people don't leave intensive care and go back to their job the next day. There's usually a step-down unit. Mm-hmm. Often they talk about transferring to another hospital for long-term rehabilitation.
Right.
So when you see the spiritually mistreated and you care about them, you have to understand that what you're dealing with them is really long-term rehabilitation.
Right, right. I keep thinking as we're talking about this subject, there's a story in the book that we relate to someone that we both know that it had a fall, you know, in ministry and was just looking for a place to try to go and seek and soak and heal. And when he attended, you know, on a Sunday, was initially welcomed, and the pastor invited him out for coffee that week. And, you know, all the signs were there initially of someone who was going to try to come alongside. But then between the Sunday meeting and the the coffee meeting, you know, the pastor was informed, you know, hey, that guy, you know, he's got a stigma about him because of what happened, you know, and it was in our county, it was in our area. We don't want him in our church, and it's your job as the pastor to let him know that. And so that what would have been an encouraging meeting with another brother over coffee turned into a, you know, hey, I'm here to tell you that you can't come back to our church. We're not willing to be that place for you to come and heal.
Wow. And, you know, the challenge of it is that at the end of the day, for all the things that we've talked about, whether you're retreated, mistreated, depleted, I do feel like we have to at least acknowledge that in one part of the book, I did some alliteration. So all my ancestors in ministry will be very proud of me. They think I've departed the faith because I no longer use the Adrian Rogers model, but we did in chapter 2 of the book. So if you're looking for a sermon about restoration, you can find it already alliterated in chapter 2. But I think the sum of all of that, if you're an individual, if you're a small group leader, if you're a church member, if you're a pastor or a staff member, my mind goes back to the series of movies from, I guess it was Pixar and Disney, called Toy Story. And, you know, kind of that little theme song that runs through that thing, "You've Got a Friend in Me." That's the issue. You've got to be a friend to people. "He that would have friends must show himself friendly." And there was a Bruce Carroll song many years ago, and I think the title of it is "Who Will Be Jesus to Him?" I don't know if you remember that, but there was a phrase in it that back then, when divorce was much less common, there was a line in it in one of the verses that says, you know, he's sitting there all alone for the first time after a divorce, and who will be Jesus to him? And sometimes all it takes to be Jesus is just go sit with the guy that everybody's staring at and wondering about. One of the things that I enjoy doing in ministry, Michael, is finding a guy who feels like the world has turned their back on him and the church has thrown him away, and publicly being his friend. I've said often to people who come to me with challenges and, well, what will people think? And, you know, my name's been in the paper, or you know, my wife has accused me of, or whatever it is that's hurting people. And I will say to them, well, it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. Why don't you come sit with me and Lori? And a few times they'll do that. Often they don't, but they will come sit on the back row. But, you know, what I'm saying to them is, I am not ashamed to be seen with you. And so whoever it is that really we're needing to see, if you do nothing else but be a friend, it will go a long way toward helping them get back on their feet.
Right. And that's something that everyone can do. You may not have a large role that you maybe, you know, feel like you can play, but everyone can show grace. Everyone can show kindness. Everyone can invite someone to sit with them in church. Everyone can invite them out, you know, even to take them home and say, hey, why don't you come and eat lunch with us and just be part of our family and let us just be with you. Thanks, Pete, today for discussing this topic, and I think a needed topic and something that will help us make this more personal as we talk about the ministry of reclaiming. Hope you'll join us again on the Reclaiming Podcast.